Precious tritium is the fuel that makes this podcast go. There's only 25 pounds of it on the whole planet.
With great power comes great responsibility.
Been a minute, Brad.
Minute doesn't even begin to describe the month-long hiatus.
Well, I went to America. Now I'm back, and now we're recording again. It's been a while. This episode is going to be a mess. I'm James. That's Brad. This is Swinging Through Spider-Man, a Spider-Man podcast where we read it through for the first time, the whole comic from the get-go. We're jumping back in after I've spent some time in America. Brad spent some time being really busy and working, and we're jumping back into a saga that we actually haven't finished. And yeah, I think we're on issue 73 now.
You know what? It's literally whilst we've been talking for like an extended period of time before this podcast, and all the while I've been looking at the show notes, just like, where the fuck did we get off? But literally, that sentence that you've just said has completely jogged my memory. I know exactly where we are now in the fact that we haven't finished this fucking saga.
So this is the Stone Tablet saga we're still on. And I'm not going to like roll on and roll on for ages before we start about where we're at and where we've been, because I genuinely don't know. Last time it was the Shocker, right? And he had the Stone Tablet and he fobbed it off and he got in a fight with Spider-Man. And Spider-Man, he came to George Stacy's house and the Stone Tablet went missing. Basically, all you need to know is there's a missing Stone Tablet that has secret powers and Spider-Man is after it to clear his name.
Makes sense. Seems like a regular Spider-Man plot.
It's simple, and I think we're on issue 73 now. So, Brad, whatever the issue number is, we'll get into it and we'll fix it after.
We'll do it live.
We'll ask for forgiveness rather than permission.
Right. It's full disclosure. You know, we are coming back off a hiatus because we just couldn't be arsed.
Was it fucking America?
Yeah, but we had an opportunity to record like last week and we just didn't.
Because you were working though?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Just literally, I was done in. But we will make it up to you. We will, honest. Just enjoy the ride. And, you know, for the people that are picking this up later, that can listen to it in chronological order, just check your privilege. Understand that you've not waited a month for this episode.
It is just an unintended hiatus. I did fully intend to kind of record before, but man, life gets in the way. And America was great, so I'm not going to sit here and apologize for having a goddamn time of my life over in the Midwest.
Fam,
brilliant,
fam.
Brilliant place.
This podcast is for just throwing it out there. We don't take any fucking sponsorship. We don't take no patrons. We don't ask you to buy patches or fucking cards or t-shirts. Like, you're getting this raw, live, like 95% unedited. Now that we have the Western Digital Hard Drive Wire.
It's woo! Back, man. The funny thing is, I found the hard drive wire and I thought I lost the fucking hard drive.
It was like immediately lost.
But Brad, issue 73 or whatever it is, it's a Stone Tablet saga. Let's get straight into it, man. Let's not mess around. Let's not delay any further. This is serious business. Let's not dilly-dally. So Spider-Man is chasing down the location of this missing Stone Tablet, and he sneaks into the house of the injured and resting Captain George Stacy. George Stacy is Gwen Stacy's father. Who is Gwen Stacy? She's Peter Parker's girlfriend. Who is Peter Parker? He's a Spider-Man, Brad.
He's a Spider-Man, but is he the real Spider-Man? We don't know.
He's the real Spider-Man. And in this first shot, we can see Spider-Man is genuinely sneaking in the house as Gwen attends to her ill father. And he's not ill, he's hurt. The Shocker broke into his fucking house.
I was about to say, he literally got 10 shades of shit beat out of him. I
think it's not even beat out of you, isn't it? It's not vibrated out of you. It's like the brown note.
The brown note. That's even worse. He got hurt in his atoms.
It's like, I would say forcefully hit with the brown note against your consent, but that's like eating a food you can't handle. Like, that is, you didn't consent to the after effects. You wanted the tasty food.
Speaking about food you can't handle, I heard something the other day and I can't unhear it. It was metal is spicy, spicy music. Like, you can't just listen to like death metal. you have to build a tolerance to it. It's like a vindaloo of music. You have to start off with a coma, which is like soft rock, and build yourself up.
Yeah, it's like you have to start off with Yumi at six, and then you kind of graduate to, you're like 4 years strong and you're a day to remember. And then by the time before you know it, you're listening to Burzum.
And you don't know what the fuck their logo says.
But Gwen Stacy is attending to her injured father, who is the ex-detective, Captain George Stacy. And they're talking about what's happened with Peter Parker. And what happened with Peter Parker is he fought their mutual friend, Flash Thompson, who had come back from the war, the undescript war. We believe it's Vietnam. But this is a sliding timeline. This is any war. So this is Iraq, basically.
Well, that's the thing that we always say about Spider-Man, which is like really fucking ironic with the way that the conversation we were just having before this podcast, is that it's always like, it always feels as though Peter Parker's issues are just always relevant, like always, like this whole thing with the student union from the last couple of issues, like that's relevant to this day. Like, Spider-Man is a hero for the people, by the people. He's not some rich aristocrat that beats up people with, like, mental health issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And George Stacy's just reassuring Gwen Stacy about her kind of mental health issue, is that the insecurity with Peter Parker. She doesn't know if he's right. But George says, look, hang on, there's a glow in your eyes when you talk about him, so I know it's true. You don't sweat it. Like, there's difficulties. Don't sweat it, love.
Gwenny, baby, I bet you pound to pennies that boy, he's got your best intentions in mind.
Pound to pennies, man. I love that. A pound to pennies. wouldn't it be a dollar to cents with George Stacy?
Oh, no. I reckon George Stacy's done some time in the UK.
He's not on that metric system, man. He's about the imperial.
What is it? Dollars to donuts?
Oh, wow.
That's the American
better.
One, isn't it?
That's even better than dollars to dimes or dollars to cents, dollars to donuts, man. Because it's not even one of them isn't a currency.
I bet you bucks to green beans.
So it's really good, actually, that they're having this conversation. It's because Peter Parker is actually lurking in this house, and it's putting to bed a lot of his anxieties. So he's like, usually, he doesn't go to therapy, but he doesn't really speak to anyone about his issues. But thankfully,
I'm not surprised, man. The last time he went to go to therapy, he ended up getting fucking hypnotized. Literally, the whole room started collapsing in on him.
But it's good. It's great that he's went through this little experience, because it's put a lot to bed and how stupid he is, basically. But he's hiding in this house, and Gwen leaves, so he says he can go down now because he assumes George Stacy is his mate. But mates, it's just one thing. Like, I wouldn't expect my friend to break into my fucking house.
Especially when you're tucked up in bed.
After being assaulted, right, he jumped in and he says, Captain Stacy, don't be alarmed. And he's fucking alarmed.
The worst thing is it's got an exclamation mark at the end of it. So it's like, Captain Stacy, don't be alarmed.
And he's shouting back. Like, Spider-Man.
The fact of the matter is that I think the way that we phrased the way how Spider-Man dropped the tablet off in one of the issues was Spider-Man came in one window, put the tablet on the desk, explained nothing, left through the opposite window and got on with his day. George Stacy's like, okay, so this tablet is now in my possession. Meanwhile, while Spider-Man's leaving out through the one window, Shocker's entering through the other wall.
It's been a wild fucking 6 hours for George Stacy. Like, all he has said is this superhuman fling himself through, drop the hottest item in town off, and a fucking villain bursts through the wall, injuring him. He's like, time for my fucking hot milk and honey. My lovely daughter Gwen has come to me with a problem. I've sorted the problem. Time for rest. I don't even need a podcast or anything to put me to bed. I'm fucking beat. Guys, I am done. Beat. I'm done. I'm ready for a 17-hour nap.
Let me just reach over here for my white noise machine.
Oh, I don't need it now. Ooh. Oh, I'm tucking it.
Spider-Man G. Willikers.
And then, just as he's about to drop off and it feels so sweet, his head is so heavy, pounding, it's hurting, just so sweet, he's going to go to sleep. Oh, sweet, sweet slumber. Spider-Man's back in, he's broken in. Not only is he broken in, he's been waiting there like for about an hour.
And he literally, the immediate thing is he just shouts his name at him.
But the conversation does take a bit of a sweetener note after Captain George says, you know, just because I don't think you're as bad as you're made out to be, please do not break into my house.
It's a fair request.
Spider-Man just says, sorry about that. And then George says, he says, what do you want to know? And it's like a Skyrim NPC conversation. Like when you pull the sword out and they're like, hey! And then you put it away, then like they do business with you.
He's just currently walking through a table and a set of chairs as we speak.
It's like when you accidentally steal something. Like you accidentally pickpocket.
In the name of the Jarl, give that back.
It's like when you accidentally pickpocket someone in Skyrim, you can see their entire life story. There's like a CV at the top. Like all the fucking house keys, every single key labelled, all the apples they've got on them. Mate, like everything.
I will never forget when I played Fallout 3 for the first time. And this sticks with me to this very fucking day. When I went into the bar in Megaton, right? And I tried... I tried to speak to the guy on the other side of the bar and accidentally stole a bottle of beer that was on the desk, like literally on the bar. And literally the whole entire gaff got up, guns drawn. I had to murder the entire town of Megaton because I accidentally stole a bottle of beer.
So I got you mixed up with my brother's story, which is he went to pickpocket someone and accidentally transferred the fucking grenade to them. Oh, and if you don't know what that does, basically it's like pulling the pin and putting the grenade into someone's pocket. But you don't know that there's no action that describes that. You just think you're giving it to them, like the grenade item. But no, you're pulling the fucking pin and put it in their pocket. No, and the guy just blew the fuck up.
No, when you do it, it does... When you do it, I can imagine the point in which he said that he fucked up. Because when you do it, you transfer a grenade. And then in the in the opposite character's dialogue, right, it says live grenade. Like that's the moment. Then there's fuck all you could do about it. You can't transfer it back. It just says in red, live grenade, and you're like, oh fuck.
Well, that's not a thing you're able to sort out with a quick conversation. Where a Spider-Man's breaking an entry's B&E is something he can sort out with a quick conversation.
If George Stacy was in Skyrim, if Spider-Man just crouched, George Stacy would stop seeing him. He's like, oh, I guess that was nothing.
Where did he go?
Just Gwen, the wind.
The vegetables ain't giving me night vision anymore.
Gwen, that's when he used to tell him that.
I got the words, you got the coin.
They didn't give him night vision in the first place. It was just like tricks of the mind.
Man, placebos, man.
Well, he realizes that Spider-Man's doing a good thing. He needs to find the tablet to clear his name. So George Stacy has a think. And it was like the shocker came around, you know that. He stole the tablet from you, from me. So where could he have gone? And George Stacy gives Spider-Man a good lead because he says that, hang on, he might have given it to an ex-girlfriend and an acquaintance. It's just a Spider-Man to leave. And Spider-Man's ready to just go find it on his own, man.
See, George Stacy, George Stacy strikes me as the kind of cop that's like, as soon as someone was murdered, it was just like the husband did it. What makes you say that?
100% record, man.
Well, it is 100% record in those days because, well,
you just put the fucker away, man.
Exactly. There was no such thing as criminal justice.
It's like, sir, your fingerprints were at the house. He's like, yeah, it's my house. He's like, book him,
book him. So you admit it, eh? Just like five police officers just start filling in him. Just. But the thing that I love most about this is that there's clearly a whole conversation going on. And whilst George is talking, Spider-Man's just already one leg out the window.
Yeah, he's gone.
Mid-conversation.
He's like everyone speaking to like a grandparent. Like, the fuck are you leaving? Like, you've come there to try and pay your respects. Like, just to have a respectful conversation. They're just going on about shit and you're leaving to get a drink and they're stopping you.
One step at a time, man.
Yeah, just what you get him towards the door, you're like, they're still speaking to you. You're like, okay,
we're going now. Bye. But really, your grandparents and your grandparents, even unless they stand at the door waving you the fuck off,
or do they follow you down the road into the car? Yes. Yes.
Nan, it's minus one. Yeah, I just want to make sure you got to your car safe. But Nan, you've got to get back to your house now, and it's minus one.
And these pavements are damn slippy.
Damn slippy, man.
So Spider-Man is hanging out the window, as George Stacy remembers, that the Shocker used to have a girlfriend who paid his bail once or twice, so potentially he trusts her enough to dump the stone tablet on her, because no one knows except really me, because of, you know, my cop history. Spider-Man straight away is there. He's heading there, mate.
He's just like, all right, don't need to tell me twice. Foot out the window, ready to go.
And the last words of George Stacy to Spider-Man are, don't take the law into your own hands, which is very much Spider-Man's deal. Like, the entire deal is taking the law into his own hands. Like, that's his thing.
No. He has the audacity to be like, wait. Don't take the law into your own hands.
He's like, call the cops.
Spider-Man's like, Spider-Man legitimately tells him to talk faster because it's windy. Drafty out here, talk faster.
But like George Stacy says, call the police. And it's like, these fucking new NYPD gumshoes aren't going to get there faster than like the Spider-Man.
Bearing in mind, like, why would Spider-Man call the police considering that they literally two issues ago unloaded every bullet in their six shooter at him?
It's like, you wouldn't ask to be.
Could you just imagine the police officer just like, oh, hey there, Spider-Man, this is just slipping one bullet at a time into his fucking revolver.
It's genuinely like Superman sitting down at a curry house and going, I feel like something spicy. Can you make sure you put kryptonite into this? Like, I can handle it now. I've built my tolerance.
I'm just imagining. Like, could you imagine Superman sitting at a curry house and he's sweating, going, ooh. You know, when you see people like rocking back and forth because they went for they stepped out of the comfort zone and went for that jowl frazee when they really shouldn't have.
Oh, no. He would have some mean alien business on the toilet.
Oh, fuck. I just remembered that's not for the podcast, though. That's personal thoughts between us and friends.
So, Spidey beelines to the house of the Shocker's ex-girlfriend, who actually isn't given a name. She's just called Exotic Dancer.
Oh, okay. I see where this is going.
Shocker's pulling it about, man.
Shocker knows what he's about, man. He's in that fucking sweet as fuck insulated suit. Which, by the way, in the hiatus, I did actually have a thought about the Shocker. Sounds strange. Right. You know how all this time that we're saying, like, it's really weird that every time that we've seen Shocker in, like, pop culture, like, wherever, it's always been, like, electric sort of thing. Right. I had a thought about Electro's sort of costume because it's definitely a hell of a lot fucking cooler than Shocker's. Like, 110%. Right. He's got that quilted padding on it, which I thought was like insulation, but that's sound dampening.
Yes.
Like, when you really think about it, that, like, whoa! It's fucking sweet as fuck.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
There's an alternative use of, you can like duct tape them to your wall if you're recording a podcast.
Or just sit in a blanket fort like I have in the previous times. Mate, actually, you know what? I highly, highly do not recommend sitting a blanket fort. It sounds like fun right up until you're like midway through and you're sweating your bollocks off. It gets hot under there, man.
You used to do that in the summer as well.
It was bad.
Dude. So Spider-Man is heading to the house of the Shocker's ex-girlfriend, and as he's hanging on the wall about to enter, he hears a lot of commotion and a lot of demands happening for a certain stone tablet within the household. So he enters the building and he finds this guy who looks like John Travolta from Greece with chronic depression and a real serious drug addiction.
So John Travolta then.
Oh, fucking hell. But this guy, he's a big guy and he's tearing the house apart and, you know, Shocker's ex-girlfriend.
Head to toe in leather.
Yeah, it's all leather. The shoes, the fucking pants.
Everything is leather.
He hasn't got a shirt on. It's just a leather jacket.
A leather jacket. I kind of appreciate it. I feel like he's also an exotic dancer. Just of the male variety.
Yeah, what he calls dancing is, I will tear through your three-piece suit and I will be fucking flipping the sofa. I'll be flipping the coffee table and I'll be flipping the lamps. I will destroy your living room. That is a dance.
Mate, you want to be careful about the three-piece suit because that is what a male exotic dancer does.
They rip through the three-piece suit. But I mean, it's three-piece suite, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah,
okay. Sorry. That is a genuine confusion. I've been cancelled on this podcast, Brad.
Cancel culture.
Oh, yeah. I'm just, you know, let me have one in debt. I'll be in credit with the cancel.
Man's in debt, like the UK.
So this guy announces his name like every good Spider-Man villain, and he says, I'm Man Mountain Marco. And
of course he is. That is definitely, he's 100% a stage name.
I believe that is what every person in Birmingham, especially in Great Bar, where you know we went to school, who owns a chip shop is called.
Oh, like, man.
It is. It, you can't tell me that this guy doesn't own a fucking kebab shop.
Nah, he's too slick for a kebab shop. He definitely, like, at least a Southern Fried Chicken joint.
Oh, man, he's spinning those gyros.
You know,
carving that lamb.
He only owns it as a tax fiddle.
Yeah, you know, he's doling out the fists. He's an enforcer. That enforcing money, it has to be laundered through delicious and disgusting fast food.
And bearing in mind, I said Southern Fried Chicken and not KFC. This is one of them off brands.
It's like Mississippi Chicken. It's got that like boat on the box.
I fucking know the boat with the setting sun in the background.
The river boat, yeah. So it turns out,
Before we move on, right? I saw a pizza box the other day from a nondescript pizza joint, right? And literally, it was just like I deciphered the box in it, right? And it had three sentences on there, right? The first one was hot fresh pizza.
Yes, I know it.
I can kind of get that, all right. And then the next one was tasty pizza, and I was like, all right.
Yeah, okay.
Home. And the next one was just like, enjoy the hot fresh taste. And it's just like, who's ordering these boxes? Like, seriously, why do you have to tell me these free things? Pizza would have done. And it's always this nondescript box that literally just says like big letters of pizza at the top. It's just like, what's wrong with getting shit branded nowadays? There's no brand loyalty anymore.
You can't get rid of it, man. Those boxes are white labeled in some goddamn godforsaken factory where someone is like crying, is just like typing out these boxes, man.
Enjoy your hot, fresh pizza.
Man Mountain Marco has no time for pizza, Brad, because it is the mafia, New York mafia. So the real fucking serious deal who sent him.
He's enjoying some hot, fresh frets.
Yeah, he's a fucking serious guy. And he knows that the shocker has stashed it here, so he's looking for an answer.
Right. The only way that this guy would have known that the shocker had the tablet is if that fucking snitch from the pawn shop told him. Like, ooh, that pawn shop geezer's gonna get done in.
Man Mountain Marco says he's a fucking weasel.
What accent is it? What dialect is that?
I don't know. I tried so hard.
Mate, the thing is, I recognise it. I just don't know what part of the country it is.
Fucking weasel. I don't know. I just pulled my cheeks in and that's what come out.
It does sound like that, to be fair. You could just see it.
He's on the loose, man.
I reckon he's a bit more nasal than that, you know.
He does look like a nasal. He looks like that nose has been broken so many times.
So many times. Like, if you want to sleep next to this geezer, you best bring earplugs because he is definitely snoring.
He's got sleep apnea, and no, it's not because he's overweight. It's because his nose has been fucking crushed. He's on the loose, dude, and he wants that stone tablet, so he is really tearing his house apart. And what really freaks Spider-Man out is when he picks up that fucking couch with his bare hands and tears it in half like the phone book.
Fuck.
And Spider-Man comes in at that moment, and he's like, no, that's just a grotesque offence against, like,
I fucking love IKEA, how dare you?
So I did make that joke, but that's kind of actually what he says with his like kind of entry point. He goes, do you know what it costs to upholster a chair nowadays? And I'm like, yeah, he's on the right track here because it is an expensive thing. And, you know, he's this guy here, he could have just like attacked her, but like you can recover from an attack. But once your shit is destroyed, it's like you might not have the money.
Oh, believe me. She's got the money. If she was attacked, she wouldn't be able to make money. All I'm saying is sex work's real work, son.
She's not sex work, it's fucking exotic dancing.
Which is sex work.
Brad, you've been cancelled once this episode as well. I declare you, that's a one cancel.
I'll bank it.
You don't have credit. Your fucking credit's no good.
Mate, I'm gonna go get a payday loan. I'll come back with credit, all right.
As Spider-Man comes through the window, Matt and Marco screams his name and the pair have a fight. Spider-Man gets like walloped in the head by him and realizes, oh, he's a real deal. Like, this guy's got them fucking Greek fists.
It's like as soon as he puts on that leather, he just energizes with the strength of a whole entire bull.
Absolute man, Mountain Marco. And he said his own name twice now in that fashion. So that's his first name is Man.
His first name is Man. Second, middle name, Mountain. Last name, Marco.
Yes.
Like, why do I feel like his parents are so Italian? like this baby was born with a vest on.
But as they fight, Spider-Man manages to get his own back by chucking him into a wall, and he realizes the danger that this woman's in because he does know the stone tablet is more than likely here. And if Man Mountain Marco finds it, like, it's going on to kill the kill zone. There can be no witnesses.
That makes sense.
So he's saying, please give me the tablet. I'll sort him out. Give me the tablet. You'll have no more trouble. And she's like, I'm not going to give it to you because you chucked Man Mountain Marco across the three-piece suite into a wall, so you are dangerous as well.
I mean, that is a fair point thinking. To say. And also, she's the other half of, you know, the Shocker, who is, you know...
A serious guy.
Serious guy, you know. Yeah, they had his ass kicked by Spider-Man enough times for her to, you know, basically go, yeah, no... Cool.
Well, Mountain Marco gets up and he realizes that he's got to take Spider-Man down, but there's no couch or sofa to hit him with, so he takes the second part of the three-piece suite, which is an armchair.
Look at and hits him with the armchair. Fuck, hits him with a flop.
And we have to do a meanwhile there, because the scene does skip across town where the Mafia, or the Magia, as they call it. I don't know how to pronounce that, but it's M-A-G-G-I-A, which is the Mafia. They've arranged to pay the bail of Wilson,
for copyright reasons. It's not the Mafia.
Yeah, you can't call them the Cosa Nostra, or the Mafia, or the New York Mafia, or the Sicilian Mob, or the New Jersey Mob. You have to keep it. You have to,
mate. You've watched so much Sopranos.
I watched the entire 7 seasons in 2 months. So across town,
was you coming home to spaghetti every night? Like, what the fuck is this, mom?
No, it's, what the fuck is this, Tony?
It's flipping a table.
Well, a former associate of the Kingpins, Wilson, is bailed by the mob to find a lead on the stone tablet. Caesar Cicero, the mob enforcer, takes him to the boss to bring him on board the team. And I think if you're being hired by the mob, there's not really a job interview and you can't really reject it.
No, it's almost as though everything's already been pre-done. Like, you have been headhunted.
But this Cicero fella, bro.
They've spent at least 2 hours looking at your LinkedIn profile.
If you look at this Cicero fellow as he leads Wilson out, like, he's vaping.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mate,
that is Kid Rock. It's a fucking easy.
That's Kid Rock. The fuck, you know, he's wearing a pimp jacket. He's got the trilby on. He's wearing shades and he's got a beard. That's Kid Rock.
No, the dude is vaping. There's a neck beard. Like, this is only heading one direction. This is heading one direction. No, he is very weird to see. That's an e-cig, Brad.
It is, to be fair.
It's not a cigarette or a cigar or a cigarillo.
it's genuinely made out of metal. It's grey. You can see that.
He's vaping, the first instance of vaping.
Man was way ahead of his time.
So Wilson, this guy, this like dude, is taken out of the jail by Caesar Cicero. And he's just like, Wilson's just saying to him, he's like, oh, you're the big time mouthpiece for the mafia. Why are you talking to me? Hey, everyone, this guy's in the fucking mafia. And I'm like, you wouldn't say, you'd get killed.
Right, hold on. Rewind. Who is this Wilson geezer? That's not Wilson. He's just
a guy, dude. No, he's just a fucking guy.
He's just a random dude.
Dude, he was working for the Kingpin and the fucking mafia have come in going, oh, you know about the stone tablet.
Oh, he's just some fucking Kingpin lacquer.
Yeah.
Very weird for him to go with the name Wilson.
Yeah, I was thinking that, but they haven't really named the Kingpin as Wilson Fisk.
Ah, okay, I'm with you.
Just call him the Kingpin.
Ah, okay.
But also, that triggered me as well. I was like, no, it's like, too
like,
close.
Like, his man been in jail that long, he's lost that much weight and grew hair.
Like, how has this gigantic New York crime boss turned into this really, like, thin insurance fucking salesman?
Nah, you're giving him way too much credit. He's definitely a car dealer man.
He's like Jill off fucking Simpsons.
Well, oh, Gellier.
Oh, no, you're God. In the mafia. Oh, you're not talking too much to old Jill, are you?
Yes, that guy. That exact guy.
That Simpsons character was the one probably likeliest to kill himself.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree with you. Definitely Mo. It's depicted number of times that Mo actually tried.
Oh, that's so sad.
Oh, yeah, proper.
Oh, that's heartbreaking. That's genuinely heartbreaking.
There was that one episode where he becomes like a poet. So there's that.
It just ends so badly for him all the time, though.
And it just goes to show, yeah, it's only because he's ugly. Because again, there's that episode where he gets prettier and then his life goes right and he gets smacked by like a car or something, doesn't it?
Well, it's for a bit of exposition. Basically, it's revealed that Cicero has been asked to bring Wilson into the mob to tell them about the stone tablet because there's a secret. And Wilson, because he was involved with the Kingpin who was chasing the stone tablet, he must know something about it or find a lead. So as they head off, we switch back to the Spider-Man fight, who is fighting Man Mountain Marco. And things get a little bit worse for him because the fight has inadvertently revealed the stone tablet in the household of the Shocker's ex-girlfriend.
You know, I'm not surprised because I feel like an apartment can only take so much super beating before just the walls fall apart.
So they're both kind of like grappling and they go for a wall. And Man Mountain Marco looks up and it's like the stone tablet is in the wall that he's just went through. And he's just went, that would have saved everyone a lot of trouble. You should have told me in the first place. And now you're both going to get it. And he looks like he's going to bludgeon them with the stone tablet.
Marco's just like, I don't like ripping up perfectly good three-piece sweet sofas. I could have had that myself.
This guy just wants a clean hit so he can take the shit.
He's the kind of guy that will flip a sofa just to make it look like a burglar.
It's like if you get made redundant from a job and you think, oh, I kind of want to take the office chair home.
You 100, like literally, if ever I get made redundant from my job, I am 100% wheeling my iMac out on an office chair. Try to fucking stop me. Like 100%.
Marco realizes that there's a few loose ends and he needs to tie them up. So he moves in to finish off the Shocker's ex-girlfriend. And Spider-Man, lying in the rubble, realizes that this could be a problem and no one dies on his watch. So he goes and tangles with Marco once again, saying, don't you know that it's impolite to threaten a female? And he, look, you can't call women females, man, because it feels like scientific. I know he's a biologist, Peter Parker, he loves his science, but it's like, she's a lady, she's a woman.
Spider-Man's just that kind of guy that just like
females.
he tweets like again about like the gender pay gap, and he's like, I'm such a good ally.
Yeah, it's like, Spider-Man, why don't you decrease your wage? No, that's not for me.
No. That's not what I meant. I just think that like women should be given a fair wage. Yeah, but you decrease your wage. No. I just think that maybe. Yeah. Okay.
Do you know the spider lamp that he has, the spider light?
the spider light, which hasn't featured
actually,
in a little while.
It's actually called the Virtue Signal.
Oh, for that's him to signal. So shit.
Sorry. That was really, really crap of me. But we head into another meanwhile where Joe Robertson, of course, the city editor of the Daily Bugle, is trying to talk his son, Randy. Randy was involved in the student union protest a few episodes or issues ago. He's trying to persuade him out of quitting college. Things went shit for Randy. He was jailed up by the police because of the protest, and he doesn't really want to do it anymore. Joe Robertson says, "You don't quit. A man without education," he's about to say, like, the anecdote, "a man without education is like," and Randy says, "I've heard it enough, Dad." As they're having this heart to heart, J. Jonah Jameson bursts in, and this guy is fresh and ready from a collapse and stint in hospital. And so Robertson took over the paper and was basically giving Spider-Man good reviews in the Daily Bugle. Jonah Jameson read this in hospital, and it basically like sent him wild. So he's come fresh from hospital straight into Joe's office, and he's just screaming like, "Where is he? Yo, Joe."
Well, I can now imagine, like, you know, Jurassic Park, when the puddle is like rippling because the T-Rex is on its way. It's just like the ashtray in JJ's office is just shaking.
It's not when the kid, that
all you the hear, T-Rex. All you hear down the hall is just like.
It's like when the T-Rex burst through the top of the Jeep, like, and it's against the glass.
JJ's mustache.
Yeah, but it's just it's not rain on the top of the Jeep. It's his spittle.
Oh,
and just his mustache, not wiping against it. No, he's really not happy with the fact that Joe Robertson has been running good editorials, and Joe Robertson's an honest reporter. So he says, "The news columns, JJ, are my fucking department, and I call them because you hired me to do that." And then fucking Joe Jameson is saying, "Well, I'll just fire you." And Joe Robertson says in front of his son, he's like, "Don't fucking sack me, man, because if you want to do your shit, I'm fine. You know, I'm gone." And then JJ says,
I'm surprised that Robertson can stand up with the weight of his fucking balls hanging between his legs, man. Geezer has massive cojones to just outright say that to Jameson. Cool as a cucumber, literally. Like, look at that face. Face looks like it's made out
stoic.
Exactly, man. Looks like it's made out of stone. He's just like, "Yeah, fuck you."
But Jameson retreats. He's like, "Wait one ding dong minute now. I accept your apology." And he walks out. But fucking Joe never apologized. He threatened to resign.
At the end of the day, I think it's almost like that chalk and cheese. Like, I've seen businesses where the geezer at the top is a loose cannon, and they always need that fucking that lightning rod. The guy that can take the pure energy and filter it down.
It scares me. There are so many people in this world like Jameson.
Oh, he's fucking scarier.
But he says he accepts the apology. Joe never apologized.
Sorry, never once left those lips.
So he threatens to resign. Jonah refuses, accepts the non-existent apology, and runs out of the office.
In JJ's book, that's a win.
He never loses. This is the guy who never loses. Like, there's no possible way he can lose.
He's a fucking... Is it Kenny Rogers when he's just like, "If I stop shouting, that means I lost the argument."
Kenny Powers.
Kenny Powers is the one.
We head back over to the really important fight, the business, Spider-Man and Man Mountain Marco. It comes to an end when Man Mountain Marco does the Spider-Man kind of D-list villain tactic of, "I will throw an innocent citizen into harm's way, so you have to either choose them or me." So he chucks the Shocker's ex-girlfriend out the fucking window.
I could just imagine, like, Stan Lee when he's writing this, and he's just like, "Oh, this is just pure gold.
This hasn't happened before."
Absolutely thrilling. Edge of the seat. Meanwhile, he's got a semi on the go.
It's just in pure creative flow. Reading the previous issue of Spider-Man.
The thing is, I remember reading an article before that basically said that that Stan Lee, whilst he was writing like 95% of his comics, was just stoned out of his tits.
I love that. I love
completely
that shit.
Completely stoned. And if you look at it like that, it makes perfect sense.
Well, the ex-girlfriend of the Shocker, and unfortunately she doesn't have a name, is thrown out of the window. Spider-Man has to, of course, jump to save her. So Man Mountain Margo, he disappears. He makes like a tree and splits, Brad, is what he would say.
Wah, 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 wah. I, Man Mountain Margo, are out of here. Just gonna walk out through this door right here, and I'm gonna get in my Man Mountain Margo mobile, also known as a Vauxhall Astra 1.6, I'll have you know.
I'm gonna listen to that fucking intense Elvis.
Yeah, put on my blue suede shoes, baby.
Well, Spider-Man's outside the window. He shoots the web line to save Shocker's ex-girlfriend, gets her to safety, but he realizes that Man Mountain Margo has bolted with the tablet. So our attention now goes away from this skirmish to kind of a verbal skirmish between Wilson, who was the associate of the Kingpin, and Caesar Cicero, who are now meeting with the mob boss with the coolest fucking name in Amazing Spider-Man so far, Silvermane.
That's pretty sick, but that's nothing compared to Man Mountain Margo. He has the best name ever, and I know because he is me. That being said, this geezer, literally, put a hood on him. Who you got? Palpatine.
Emperor Palpatine. Look at the size of those hands.
Man has been grafting. He has worker hands.
This geezer is like, he's like, imagine if a gorilla was also a wolf, was also an Italian mob boss.
Holy shit, why is that so perfect? Holy fuck. Never before have you been so accurate in all of your descriptions.
But he's meeting with Wilson and Cicero, and they're like, oh, well, Wilson says, oh, this man is obviously called fucking Silvermane, because look at, that's the only thing he could ever be called. And Wilson's like, hey, you're the man called Silvermane. Yeah, one of the legendary leaders of the Mafia. And Silvermane says, you're one of the fucking worthless pawns of the Kingpin.
Ooh. Literally cutting deep straight away.
Fucking worthless. And he wants the stone tablet. But he also says, I'm old, I'm tired, but this I tell you, so long. Fucking done.
Straight to the point,
man. I don't
know
whether he's Italian or Irish. He looks very Irish.
I'd go with Irish. I don't know, man. He looks Irish to me.
He looks like he could be a lot. But he's the leader of the Italian mob.
So he would be...
Italian.
Italian. That would make perfect sense.
Based on all of my knowledge of the mob that comes from The Sopranos, there are Irish people in the mob.
That makes a lot of sense. It's obviously around that era, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's too deep for this. But Silvermane basically wants the stone tablet in his possession because he's got an idea of what it could be about. As they meet, Man Mountain Margo, who of course has been hired by the Mafia, as we know, bursts in with the stone tablet and hands it over to Silvermane.
Mate, he's holding it like a piece of toast.
He comes in like that's a deli sandwich.
Like literally, hand
he's
underneath
so
it.
He's like, I got it, boss.
Man Mountain Margo is genuinely a Man Mountain. He has to like crouch through the door. Like he has to press circle before he can walk through it.
So Wilson gives all his value away by instantly verifying the stone tablet. Like that's what he's been brought there to do. And Man Mountain Margo hasn't even handed it over. And Wilson's like, oh, that's dude, Silvermane, you won't believe that. You won't fucking believe this. That's a stone tablet.
You won't get your fucking hat on, mate. Whoa, fucking, ooh, shiver me timbers.
Silvermane's there like, we have no use for you then.
Yeah, you do. No,
no, fuck. It's... No, well, I was joking.
Ah, got ya. Lighten up. I may be old, but I still got a funny bone in me.
Yeah, you've done well, Marco. But I knew you would not fail me.
So we've gone from Irish to Italian to Yogi Bear. Smarter than the average bear, boo-boo.
It's like, the way he talks to Man Mountain. That's how he sounds, like smarter than the average bear, boo-boo.
Man Mountain Marco, I knew you would do me good, sunshine. Bring over that tablet to your dear old pops now.
He literally speaks to Man Mountain Marco like his large adult son, boo-boo. Like, Man Mountain Marco said, like, what makes that crummy hunk of rock so valuable, Silvermane? He's like, ah, my gigantic underling.
Literally, the other thing is that everyone's exchanging hands with this tablet, and none of them, not a single person, knows what the fuck it does.
It's like nobody, not a single person, not a soul. Then there's Wilson. It's genuine. It's genuine, guys. But Silvermane has been kind of detached from this conversation. I mean, it might be something to do with his age, maybe the hearing. He's like, Wilson, study it. Make sure it's genuine. And Wilson's back over it with a magnifying glass in fucking seconds.
He's really trying to prove his worth. He's just like,
yeah,
this is in some sort of ancient language right here. I believe it's called Pig Latin.
A Man Mountain Marco is just standing over it, like arms, like against his hips, saying, "What do the fucking scratches?
What do the scratches mean?" Like Wilson's just looked at it and learned a new dragon shout.
Brad, I'm a decent improviser in video games, so it's like, The game plan goes out the window. I'm here. I've discovered the third part of the Fusfer Dar chant, and a dragon priest is descending. I am using that and sending him out the fucking window.
Have you ever watched the video of the geezer that dragon chants a geezer off of a mountain, and then he fast travels to Whiterun or something like that?
That quick, goes
quick
off.
Enough in order for the body to drop into said vision.
God. Oh my god.
Physics, man.
Skyrim and Oblivion, masterful games of physics. We know this well. That those games perfected physics.
Mate, the problem with Oblivion for me is that if I'm playing an open world game like that, if it tells me to go left, I'm gonna go, cool, I respect your decision, and I go right. So within like literally the first 10 minutes of playing Oblivion, I wound up in an Oblivion portal. I had no weapons. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I was like, literally, man, help. Where am I? I didn't have a fucking clue. I had men coming at me with fireballs, bows that I was too small of a level to use. I was just running around trying to find my way out. That was the last time I played Oblivion.
It's on Xbox Game Pass, so I'm thinking about jumping back in, but I realise how soul-crushing that game can be. It's so good.
It hurts me to play. I'm going to put several hours into it.
My brother, when he discovered like the Daedra tunnels, the Oblivion Gates, would use to fucking scream in terror when he entered them. Like, that's what I was just terrifying.
Mate, I was level one. I walked into that motherfucker. Just out of the fucking blue. I didn't know what I was doing. That's how you ruin a game.
You got to the point when I'm decent in the game and I see the Oblivion Gate and I turn away. Like, it's not worth the hassle.
I'm clearly that fucking idiot in every horror movie that's like, yeah, I'm definitely going to walk towards the danger.
So, like, Wilson could open, like, a hell portal here.
Yeah, he has literally no idea what he's doing.
Like, and Silverman's like, oh, it's a fucking... Oh, look at that portal, boo-boo. I can't do this. I've lost it.
Why is there a Daedra Queen in here, boo-boo?
You've got it, man.
Whatever happens, protect the picnic basket.
Man, Mark is just nodding. Oh, yes, boss.
Aye, ready? Man Mountain Marco is going to punch the Daedra Queen until she submits. Why is it not working?
I do it for your dad, I mean Silvermane. So Spider-Man, on the other hand, cannot find Marco. So he heads home to wait for another lead on the tablet. This is where he realizes that as Peter Parker, he needs to catch up with Dr. Kirk Connors, you know, the former Lizard, who can offer him maybe something in terms of work and in terms of, you know, a future. But he makes a phone call to Kirk Connors' house and he wakes up his wife because obviously it's 1 a.m. in the fucking morning. And she answers the phone and she's like, oh, she's been crying clearly because Kurt has left unexpectedly with a couple of people who've never been seen there before. And instead of comforting her or saying anything of kind of like value, he kind of just says, sorry, I bothered you, and puts the phone down. So she's still presumably on the phone whilst he's going on this monologue about how dangerous her fucking husband is.
I swear she has no recollection that Kirk Connors was the Lizard, though.
Either she knows or she doesn't. So either he's revealing this or he's revealing that everyone knows he's the fucking Lizard. Or at least he knows.
So rather than being like, I'm sure those strange people were just Kirk Connors' friends, he's just like, yeah, they definitely probably want him because of his Lizard powers.
So back at Silverman's place, Dr. Kirk Connors, of all people, is rushed into the room to help the research on the stone tablet.
How convenient.
How fucking convenient. And Silverman's giving the whole spiel. He's saying, you're just the doctor we need. I can't do it, Brad. I'm sorry.
Peter's just like, fuck it. He's just resting up against the bookcase as it's all happening.
He's like, I wonder why Kirk Connors was kidnapped in the middle of the night. Huh. Can't be anything to do with the stone tablet, surely.
Clearly not. Hey, Kurt, I heard that you were a man to see about a dog. Or maybe that was a lizard. I don't know.
Well, Dr. Kirk Connors gives Silverman a spear. He says, look, I'm just a dime a dozen research assistant from the Everglades. You grabbed the wrong man. And he's like, no, you're just a man.
You underestimate yourself, Doctor. You're just a man. Lizard man. /man I need.
And Silverman doesn't know he's a lizard. But Kirk Connors does know he's a lizard because, of course, he's like, you can't keep me here. It's not safe.
Why do I feel like Kirk Connors has come in like pretty much every time you've ever seen Nicolas Cage in an interview? He's just like, I'm not safe to be in here, man. You can't keep me. You can't keep me contained.
He's like Rorschach. He's like, you're in here with me.
Meanwhile, like no one understands. Like he's just completely off the rails for no reason. Silverman's just like, is that a fact? Just looking at Man Mountain, like from the side eyes. So like this guy is so emo. why would it be unsafe, son?
And of course, Dr. Kirk Connors can't tell anyone he's a fucking lizard man. So he says, forget that. There. Well, sorry.
It's just a lizard phase.
And of course, it's foreshadowed by the next issue being all bedlam breaks loose. Because of course, that's what happens when you lock a fucking lizard man in a room full of very violent and aggressive, threatening people.
Also, the bedlam is wrote in green. Just going to throw that one out. It might as well just say lizard breaks loose.
Yeah, it's fucking happening, man. You put him in that lab coat, he's getting that arm back and he's turning green and he's getting claws.
I like how he always seems to be in a lab coat whenever he turns into lizard man. Like he can't ever be out golfing or something, you know what I mean? He's like always in a lab coat.
It always happens when he's really pissed off. So it's when he's playing like fucking Halo Reach and no one's letting him be on the back of the Warthog. So like,
mate,
fucking loses it. And then all of a sudden he grows back the other hand he can use to use the other trigger so he can aim and throw grenades.
Actually, you know what? This is one thing I've been looking at with Xbox recently. This is like a legitimately like cool thing. And I'm just going to throw it out there in case people don't know about it. Is Xbox have actually released a plethora of accessible controllers for people such like the Lizard Man with only one appendage to play games with. So like you can literally customize a bank of control of buttons and controllers so you can play with disabilities. How cool is that?
I've seen that stuff and it's amazing.
Like, at the end of the day, I think it's pretty awesome. But like the other thing is that there's geezers out there that can shoot people with tracking of the eyeballs. And I'm just like, part of me is wondering how much of an advantage would that be if an able-bodied person got a hold of it?
It's, dude, it's real.
It is real. But basically superhumans in Call of Duty.
That is the end of the issue, though, Brad. Back in action.
Back in action.
I need to get this...
Another serious note, though, is that people that may not know about this podcast and or listen to James's other podcasts may not know that he's currently got a promotion.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
So congratulations, people. Like, let's sound off in the comments and that. Like, you know, let my co-host know that he's doing fucking sweet at life.
Yeah, I can't wait till the contract comes through and it says, oh, you can't be in that Swinging Free Spider-Man anymore. So I just have to put on a really bad voice. Like, this is Silvermane presenting.
Mate, you couldn't even keep Yogi Bear up for like literally a sentence. Mate, you'd have to
do other people, but I can't do Silvermane.
Mate, the whole entire podcast would have to come to you through the silky vibes of Wilson Fisk.
That's it.
Hello. I hope he comes back. This is James Rushton. No, you'd have to bring up a pseudonym name as well.
Hello, this is Wilson Fisk.
Hello, it's Sunshine.
I haven't been named yet in the Amazing Spider-Man series, but you can bet on it. You can bet your bottom dollar that my name will be Wilson Fisk.
Yeah, another little thing as well is that, like, in serious notes, apologies for the hiatus. We will be regularly scheduled Spider-Man goodness from now on in.
Yeah, absolutely. Brad, let's call it short there. We got to get back on the wagon and start getting these damn issues done and get through this fucking Stone Tablet saga.
It's dragging a bit, although it does seem to be getting a bit spicy now.
It's good. It's good stuff. But yeah, you can find us at Spidey Podcast. We'd love to hear off you. We'll be back soon. We'll be back very soon with the next issue of The Amazing Spider-Man. So keep it real and see you very soon. Goodbye. Peace.